Well, good morning, Hillcrest. As we get ready to kind of kick off our message today, we are doing, obviously, as the sign shows, a Faith in Rock and Roll series. We've done this many times over the years. In the past, we've done series that have been based on certain either eras of music or bands or certain kind of genres, I guess. We've done big hair bands. We've done the 60s. We did James Taylor. We've done quite a few of them over the years. This time we're talking about the Beatles. Now, the Beatles didn't write religious music in their, you know, their genre of what they played and what was commercialized for them. At the same point, there are things about music that, regardless of who it was written for or even the purpose of it, there are some truths, some eternal truths that show up in these songs because they're written by humans who are trying to make sense of things or who are struggling or who are in need in some way. Well, as we kick off this series talking about the Beatles, they're not all Beatles songs, by the way. Some of them are John Lennon songs. And for other than those of you that are really into it, most people don't know the difference between those two. But for you hardcore, I'll just tell you right now, you don't have to email me. I know some of them are John Lennon songs, but we don't care. The first song is a song. In fact, the year that it came out, 1965, so just a few years ago. And the Beatles were actually releasing their second movie. It was a first movie in color for them. And the title of the movie was Help. The title song on that movie was under that same title, Help. And it was on the Beatles' fifth album that this song showed up. It was a song that was written by John Lennon, but it was also helped. The writing was done by Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney kind of came into the end of that song. Mainly John Lennon is the one that put the words to that song, and then they, of course, put some music to it. And as they were writing this song and getting ready to release it, people loved the song. There was something about what it communicated, certainly the tempo or the movement of the song that people connected with. But for John Lennon, he said, in reflecting back on this, he said, when I wrote the lyrics to the song Help, he said, it was what I would call my fat Elvis days. Okay, now those of you that don't know about Elvis and his different weight gain that he had later on, what John Lennon was talking about is that it was at a time of crisis for him when he was trying to make sense of the fame and fortune that he had received and also trying to keep the Beatles relevant. And he was really struggling personally. But he said, even at the time, I wasn't fully aware of how much I was struggling, but it came out in the words. And when he was talking about this song, I want to read a quote for you because he said, I meant it when I wrote these lyrics. He said, it's real. The lyric is as good now as it was then. It is no different, and it makes me feel secure to know that I was aware of myself then. It was just me singing Help, and I meant it. The opening lyrics really set the tone for the song. It was, help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. This song has connected with millions of people over the years, and as a result, it's been covered by many different artists. I wrote down just a couple of them. Dolly Parton. You know she did this song? Tina Turner, U2, Deep Purple, even the Carpenters. Dozens of other musicians, artists, bands have covered this song. And to add to the list, this morning, we have Hillcrest's cover band, Tick and the Weevils. Give it up for Tick and the Weevils. They're going to sing Help for us. Come on, give them a hand. Nice hair.
All right, I wrote this song a while ago. I'd like to sing it for you now. He already introduced it, so I'm not going to do that. Help! I need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now those days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind, I've opened up the door. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? And now my life has changed in oh so many ways. My independence seemed to vanish in the haze. But every now and then I feel so insecure. Know that I just need you like I've never done before. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now those days are gone, I'm not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind, I've opened up the door. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being around. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me, help me, help me.
Right, way to go, Ticking the Weevils. Jacob didn't know that I named the group that till this morning. You know, the song was such a hit. Interestingly, when John Lennon wrote that song, he wrote it as a ballad, as a slow song. It connected more with him in that way. But of course, you know, when it got to the record label and everything else, they said, no, we need to commercialize this song. We need to kick up the tempo. The original song, 2 minutes and 18 seconds is all that song was, with 267 words in it. I mean, it really was just jamming. And the original, as they sing it and with the background vocals, I mean, the amount of times they say help in this song, as they are trying, you know, as John Lennon was trying to get this idea across. Help. I need somebody. Do you need somebody? Do I need somebody? I mean, people connected with this for a reason, but, you know, today, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on you know, our independence, our individuality. You know, I don't need anybody. I can handle everything on my own. But you know what? We are a people who need somebody. Even if you don't think that you're, maybe you are a people person. Maybe you think you're a no people person. It doesn't matter if you're introvert or extrovert. We are a people who need people. We do need other people. We can't do life without others. In fact, you could not be where you are today without the influence, without the involvement, without the help, without the assistance of other people. This is just logic, okay? Basic logic. If you're born, and once you're born, from that point forward, no human contact at all, would you have survived? Well, of course not. I mean, maybe for a few hours, maybe a few days. I mean, if you were lucky, you might have gotten raised by wolves, you know, and then Discovery would do a documentary on you later on. But for the most part, no. If you are born and never touched again, you're not going to survive. You needed others. You needed help along the way. And it didn't just change from birth. You've always needed others. You've always needed help. I mean, what if you never had any more human interaction after the age of 13? Or 25, or 35. I mean, there's been movies that have been made about this where people have a best friend that's a volleyball. I mean, you need people. You will create the facade of others for relationship, for connection, for companionship, to bounce ideas off of, to talk with, to help understand the experience you're going through, no matter what time or era you have lived in. We need people. We need people to help us along the way. You've always needed people, and you always will. If you're following along today, your first fill-in is needing people is normal. It is normal to need people. We were created to need people. In fact, I would go as far as to say we were created to be in community, which is, you know, another version of needing people, but we need community. We need people around us. And when God created humanity, he created humanity in his image, which was an image of community. The Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, three in one. Community in God's image, and he created us in that image. In fact, when he created all that was known, and he created Adam, for Adam, Adam was incomplete because he didn't have community, because community didn't exist with animals. Community didn't exist with trees. Community didn't exist with, you know, Mother Nature, however you will define that. Community could only happen with other people. And so God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. And he created Eve, and together they are community. Together they are the fullness of humanity. You need others. I need others. We need other people. It's ironic how we are created for community, yet we find ourselves being so selfish, right? We find ourselves thinking really only about our own needs many times and not about the needs of other people. It's never so evident for me in my life. Because as a pastor, I mean, I'm kind of like, part of my gig is to help with the needs of other people. But if you catch me driving in the car, you know, and if it's just me or it's my family in the car, I mean, I will spend a good portion of the drive complaining, not even complaining, correcting all of you. Hey, I have lots of stuff to say when I'm driving. Am I considering that the person that has caused the traffic incident up front is a mother who just got a call from the school that her child has, you know, been taken to the hospital and she's rushing to get there? Do I consider that? No. It's my needs at that moment. I'm trying to get to McDonald's. You see, certain perspectives, if you knew them, you'd feel horrible about it. But we don't always consider the needs of other people because we really get wrapped up with our own needs. Now, I'm not saying, I mean, this obviously can be bad, but it's natural for you to care about your own needs. It's natural for you to be concerned about how you're doing. That's normal. But it's not good when it means that we negate or forget or do not ever consider the needs of other people. In Philippians 2:4, the scripture gives us this advice. It says, don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. It's not just about your needs, getting from point A to point B or whatever it is that you've got going on in your world. You might even have really difficult things or challenging things. But when you have challenging things, other people have challenging things as well. Do you know, when you're really under the gun, right, under pressure, and things aren't going well, and you're just feeling the squeeze, can you be less kind to others in those moments? Less patient? Maybe your words are a little more biting than they have been before? And as you act that way, which we shouldn't, but we do, when we act that way, there is an expectation that people give you a little bit of grace, a little bit of space, right? Because I'm going through some hard stuff. The thing is that most people don't know you're going through hard stuff. But why is it when someone does it to us, that's never consideration, that they're going through hard stuff? We're just like, hey, don't be a jerk to me. You want to fight? I'm ready to fight, you know? You want to dance? I'll dance. We don't consider maybe what they're going through. You see, the idea is just don't always think about what you've got going on. What you've got going on is important, significant, things you need to deal with, true. But remember that there are others who are going through things as well. Not just your own interests, but the interests of other people. We need to be people who care about others, that show an interest in other people. It's not easy to do all the time. You know, do you offer other people what it is that they need because they're in need? Or do you only get into relationship with people for what you can get out of it, what they can provide for you? Because I think many of us could benefit from focusing a little bit more on the interest of others and the skills that are kind of needed for having an interest in other people. Now, if you struggle with things like empathy, or you struggle with really caring how your neighbor's doing or how someone else is doing. I want to give you a little bit of advice today. I want to give you a couple things that you can focus on that will help you take more interest in others. Now, at first, you're going to have to fake it, okay? That's okay. Fake it till you make it. And eventually, you will find that as you care or try to show care to other people, you'll find that you will begin to care about people. I mean, take it from someone that really, at certain points in my life, really lacked empathy. But as I took interest in other people, I began to care more about their needs or care about what was going on with them. One thing that you can do, and it is so simple, in ways of taking care of others, is to call them by name. People want to know their names. Now, I don't know why, as a pastor, God gave me this inability to remember names. It's crazy. Some of you are in professions, maybe a teacher, and it just sounds like you are so insincere or that you don't care because you can't remember people's name, and everyone you see that you know you should know their name, you have to call them buddy, you know, or man, dude, hey. And you're like, man, I wish I could remember the name. For me, it kind of works like this. If I meet someone for the first time and we exchange names, I am at the heart, at the core of who I am, I'm an introvert. So I know some of you are like, you're what? Yes, I'm an introvert. And as an introvert, I want to do well in those first encounter conversations, and I don't want to create awkward silence, you know? So like I've got some go-to things I know I can talk about, whether it's the weather, we're great about that around here, or ask some various questions. But if the person I'm talking to is not someone that's willing to like reciprocate, if they one word answer me, I know I've got like 30 seconds with this person and we're done. We're going to stare at each other. My mind is so focused on how to make this conversation go well that when they tell me their name, sometimes it's in one ear and out the other. And literally 30 seconds after they say their name, I'm like, I have no idea what this person's name is. And then, you know, you see them the next time and they know yours. You're like, hey, Doug, how you doing? I'm like, hey, how you doing? And then pretty soon it gets so awkward, right? You're like, now I really should know this person's name. It would be great for those of us that are really bad with names if the rest of you would just come up to us and just remind us of your name. Because I feel like even I have to do that with my wife sometimes, you know? Like, I mean, it's not that bad for me, but it feels like it's that bad at times. Whew. But, you know, people like to know their name because it makes it seem like you care enough to remember that. It's important to know people's names. So call someone by name. But another thing also is to pay attention. You know, pay attention to them. I try to look at it this way. Every single person in the world is just a more, hopefully, more mature version of their 3-year-old self with their mom at the store. Hey, mom, mom, hey, mom, mom. You know, pulling on that. Mom, hey, mom, 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 hey, mom. Everybody wants to be paid attention to. Pay attention to me. Or like, you can't go to the pool with 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds and them not do this the whole time. Hey, watch me do this. Hey, mom, look at this. Hey, dad, watch me do this. You know, and then what do you do? Pay attention. I'm going to do some really cool stuff. Oh, yeah, that jump in the pool. Never seen that before. But everybody's this way. We grow up. We learn to be more mature, but we're still saying it to everybody. Hey, look at me. Hey, watch this. Hey, notice me. So pay attention to people. It's important that we pay attention to people. When you're with them, make eye contact as you talk to them. Pay attention to your body language. There's nothing worse than talking to someone and they're not squared up to you. Instead, they're doing this. You're like, okay, I assume you left the conversation at some point. Just if I could shut up long enough, you're going to run away. Okay. If you're going to be in the conversation, be in the conversation. Look them in the eye. Don't look around, glance around. Is there someone more interesting I can talk to? Like, that's what it feels like. Square up. Have a conversation. Engage the person. Another way to do that is my third idea for you is ask some questions about people. People want to be known. If they tell you their story and then you follow up with a question, it tells them that you heard the story and that it matters to you in some way. And you need follow-up information. You really want to know something about them. And it endears people to you. So try and have that where you're asking questions, where you're engaging them, where you're trying the best you can to take an interest in that person and the things that they're interested in. It doesn't matter that you're not interested in it. For all my kids, I've tried to help them with this over the years because as kids, it's hard to talk to adults. But, you know, adults start to engage kids when they hit 13 and 14 and 15 and 16. I tell the kids, like, you can't just do kid stuff anymore. Like, you need to engage the adults. You go, well, I don't know what they're talking about. You just bring up anything, but it's engage them. They're trying to engage you. It may not last too long, but it's just this idea of taking an interest in them, asking questions, getting to know someone. Another thing that you can do is you can remember people's special days or significant events. There's nothing more meaningful, and I've had people tell me this before, there's nothing more meaningful than when something like the death of a loved one takes place, and, you know, everybody is around and paying attention, and then, you know, a few weeks go by, and it's less and less, and then pretty soon, you're just back to normal life. You see, a year later, especially a significant relationship, when that date comes, it's almost all you can think about, and no one else is thinking about it. And when that friend of yours or someone drops a note in the mail or whatever it might be, sends you an email or a text that says, hey, I'm thinking about you today. I know this is a tough day. And there is something about that, isn't there? There's something about that that says, man, this person remembered my difficulty, my struggle, and for whatever reason knew that a year later it would still be hard today. And when you can remember people's special days, birthdays are pretty easy with some of the social media cues that we have for some of that. But remembering people's special days, significant moments in their life can really show that you're taking an interest in a person. And the last one I'll share with you of these different ideas is to go out of your way. This is where you make a little extra effort and someone knows you made extra effort. Now, there are some simple ways to do this, and they are seriously old school. Write a note with ink on a piece of paper and put it in one of those things called an envelope. You have to get one of those things that you haven't seen for 10 years called a stamp. And you stick it on there and it goes in the mailbox. I tell you, when someone gets something hand addressed to them, you know, and you open up and it's like just a short note, whatever it may be to them, it means something different than the email. It means something different than these other forms of communication. So try as best you can to, you know, connect with people. You know, take that interest and go out of your way. Maybe it's a phone call instead of a text message. Some people really like this. Some people don't like this. So hopefully you know the person well enough to know this. Some people, like when they're down and out or they're sick or they're whatever it is, and they kind of hold themselves up in their house, they love it if you just come over and just like barge in. Like, I'm going to be with you because you're like wallowing in your pity and I'm going to be present here. Other people, if you do that, they're going to call the cops. They are not interested in it. So it doesn't work for everybody, but you know your people. You know the people that you interact with, that you hang with. Find ways to go out of your way to show them that they're important to you, that they are significant to you. You know, don't only look out for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. In fact, God tells us to go beyond just taking an interest. He wants us to take an active interest in people. Because when we take an active interest, we are joining people in the midst of their difficulties or their struggles or their problems or their burdens. In Galatians 6:2, God encourages us in saying, share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. Share in each other's burdens, and in doing it, you're obeying the law of Christ. What's the law of Christ? If you share in someone's burden, you're going to be obeying the law of Christ. What do you think it could be? Yeah, love God, love others. Love. I would say just love. When you are loving people, when we're doing something in love, that's obeying the law of Christ. Christ came to be the fulfillment of God's love. And so when you do something for someone, when you step into their pain, you carry their burden, you carry their water, you carry their load for a while. It's a way of expressing sacrificial love to someone, and that is obeying the law of Christ. We've got to be a people who will jump into that. When you give financially for the backpack program, you're helping feed kids. You're carrying the burden for them of hunger so that they can eat. And in doing so, you fulfill the law of Christ. You know, here at Adams Thermal Foundation, 104 kids sponsored. You're carrying the burden of poverty, generational poverty that's been going on for thousands of years. And with one sponsorship, And that sponsorship continues through that kid's elementary, middle school, and high school years. They graduate high school. They will be able to escape generational poverty. Right now, Adams Thermal has their very first graduating senior class. 40-plus kids, and every single one of them that are in are going to university. And of all the kids that are going to university, they are top in the entire country of Ethiopia. Top students. They're the smartest of the smartest in that group. They're going to go on to do great things, and they are going to be the first ones to have an opportunity to escape the poverty that's been affecting their people, their land, their homes, for generations. And you can't underplay that. When you step into that sponsorship, you are carrying the burden to provide something for someone that you may never meet, and they may never meet you, but you changed a life. Share each other's burdens, and in this way, you will obey the law of Christ. Look, obeying the law of Christ has a cost. It'll be your time, and it also many times ends up being your resources. You know, for people who give financially to things, like a sponsorship, I just want you to know, because maybe you're like, you know, I can't afford a sponsorship. I want to debunk something for you that maybe you're telling yourself. Do you know that no one here... And I mean, I don't know everyone here, but I can pretty much say this is true. If it's not true for you, stand up and let us know. But I would say that for all of us here, there is no one that at the end of the month has like money left over. They're like, I don't even know what to do with this. I just have extra. I might as well sponsor a kid. Right? Everybody has places for these dollars to go. But someone sacrifices and says, I'm not going to this so that I can do this. It takes sacrifice. It always takes sacrifice. Nobody just has extra laying around to do something with. The work of the church, the work of Christianity is built on the sacrifice of others. Not only their time, but also the resources that they have. You know, maybe you have sympathy for hungry kids. Maybe you have sympathy for the people in Ethiopia that don't have access to education and will continue in poverty. Maybe you have sympathy for that. I would tell you, sympathy is no substitute for action. Nobody needs your sympathy. They need you to step into what that sympathy is and do something about it. Because you have means, you have ability, you do have resources to be able to help other people. It may not be easy, but as Christians, we have to obey the law of Christ. We can't just sit back and expect other people to do it. When kids need to be sponsored in Ethiopia, we can't just say, someone else will do it. I don't have to do it. We can't make our needs the greatest thing on in our lives. We have to make the needs of others important. There's this great story where Jesus is at the temple, and this woman comes, and she gives these two little copper coins. And she drops them in, and because of the way the bucket is, you can kind of hit them here at the bottom. And everybody's making fun of this old lady for putting these two little coins in. Together, they're worth about a penny. And they're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you just put a penny in the offering plate. You know what Jesus says? She gave more than all of you. Because he said she gave everything she had. A starving widow, a widow that had nothing, but yet she took what she had and she gave it all. And it didn't matter the amount, it was the heart condition. And Jesus says, and that's it. Like, that's nailing it right there. And for us to be a people that say, like, I'm unwilling to give to someone else because I need, I want. It's not that your needs aren't important, or your needs are important. You do have to take care of your needs. The family that you have, that God has given you to be a steward over and to help and to assist and to love and to care for. But there are other people that are in need, and we can't just say, you know, I'm not gonna give to something because I don't have an expendable income or I don't have extra left over, so I'm not gonna be a part of making a difference in this world, because that's not sharing the love of Christ. That's not obeying the law of Christ. All right, I'm going to step on a couple toes. I don't mean to. Well, yes, I do, because I'm choosing it. There's something I hear from many Christians that I need to at least address today. And you may choose to disagree with me, but I'm going to try and make a case where that's impossible, because I'm going to use the Bible to help support this idea that I think it happens in our world that we need to address and say, as Christians, this isn't a way we need to be thinking about things. And it does have to do with giving. Now, please, if you think that these next few moments as I talk about this is an attempt to get money from you in some way. No, that's not the case. Keep your money. Like, that's not it. But as followers of Christ and as your pastor, I need to address some things when I see it, a pattern continue over and over again in how we look at our money and how we look at our giving and what we do with that. So let me just address something here, because there is something that many Christians do with their giving that is, I don't think, right and not keeping with the law of Christ, which is love. Now, giving is not something that we do only when it's easy. It is something that we do no matter what our personal situation is. Followers of Christ are givers, just like the widow, right? She gave even though she was a person in need. So before I say exactly what I want to say, I want to tell you a story in the Bible. Actually, I want to read the story for you. And it's a story in which there was a prophet, and his name was Elijah. Okay, now Elijah was in a situation where he needed help. He was actually in danger, and he was needing provision. And so he was hiding away, but what the provisions that he had while hiding away were starting to literally dry up. And he needed more provision. So God intervenes, as he had been doing all along, and he gives Elijah some information. And then from that point on, this story kind of unfolds, all right? So I wanted you to see how God provides and who it is that he has provided for Elijah, okay? It's going to be in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 17. I'm going to read verses 7 through 16. It says, "But after a while, the brook dried up, for there was no rainfall anywhere in the land. They had a drought that was going on. It was terrible. So then the Lord said to Elijah, 'Go and live in the village of Zarephath, near the city of Sidon, and I have instructed a widow there to feed you.' So he went to Zarephath, and when he arrived at the gates of the village, he saw a widow gathering sticks, and he asked her, 'Would you please bring me a little water in a cup?' As she was going to get it, he called to her, 'Bring me a bite of bread too.' Just a little cup of water, bite of bread. But she said, 'I swear by the Lord your God that I don't have a single piece of bread in the house, and I have only a handful of flour left in the jar and a little cooking oil in the bottom of the jug. And I was just gathering a few sticks to cook this last meal, and then my son and I will die.' But Elijah said to her," this is what you don't expect him to say, but he says it. He says, "Don't be afraid. Go ahead and do just as you've said. Make a little bread for me first." Now, if you heard this conversation, like, wouldn't you have some words for Elijah? Dude, like, the widow has no food left. They're making a final meal to die. And you're like, yeah, do that. But hook me up with a little bread first. And then use what's left to prepare a meal for yourself and your son. Interesting. Verse 14. And these are Elijah saying this. He says, "For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. There will always be flour and olive oil left in your containers until the time when the Lord sends rain and the crops grow again, when the drought's over. There will be flour and oil left." So she did as Elijah said. And she and Elijah and her son continued to eat for many days. And there was always enough flour and olive oil left in the containers, just as the Lord had promised through Elijah. What's the point? The point is this. The woman had no extra to give, did she? She had nothing to give. In fact, when Elijah said, "You need to give," she explained why she had nothing to give. But you see, God had told Elijah that he had sent this widow to be the one to feed him, so he had faith in this. And he said, "Look, let's just do the God thing here, all right? Do as you said, make bread, but as you do it, make some for me first. The first part, let's give to God, and the rest, go ahead and consume. And let's just trust that God will provide for us as we continue on and as we move forward." Not only did the widow say she would die, but she had a responsibility to care for this son of hers. She was risking the life of someone that she was charged in caring with. I can't think of a more serious situation that she had to have faith in, to give God the first part and trust that he would take care of the rest. Now, there's two groups here today, maybe three groups total. first group are those of you that are here today that, for whatever reason, are unwilling to give anything. I'm not speaking to you today, okay? I don't mean that like I'm not talking to you. I mean, like I'm not addressing that issue. For those that don't give, you're missing out on blessings. You're missing out on the plan that God has that he wants to do in and through you. You're just missing out on those things. There are those of you here today, maybe another group, that have been giving sacrificially, and no matter what, when there's just not enough flour and oil, you still give. But it's the middle group that I want to talk about, which is those that say, you know, when I go through hard times or difficult moments, I just stop giving. Because I got to take care of number one. I got to take care of my family. I got to take care of me. I've got bills I've got to pay. And so I'm going to stop giving so that I can take care of what I need to take care of. And that's a thing that I continue to hear over and over and over again within the Christian community that I want to challenge and say, you know, giving is personal. You can decide what it is that you want to do, but you're going to be hard-pressed to find scriptural evidence that says when you're on hard times, don't ever help someone else and just take care of yourself. Because a widow gave everything that she had, the two coins. And Jesus said, rock star. This gal, her and her son are going to die, but yet Elijah says, a little bread here first. And what happened is that the jar never ran out of flour and the oil never ran out. See, the example, the teaching of Scripture is to give no matter what we have and trust that in giving that God will provide what it is that we need. God always provides what we need. I believe that the church as a whole and Hillcrest could do way more if we were all faithful in our giving and gave even in difficult times. If we could trust to sacrificially in our own lives give to others, then God would provide us with what we need. Our oil and our flour will never run out. I mean, you may not be at home, you know, biting down on prime rib and drinking Chardonnay, but you'll have what you need. Look, all of us are people in need. Every one of us here, there's not a person here that is not in need in some way, all in varying degrees, but we're in need. And it is normal to be in need because God created us with a need for community and relationship in each other. And when another person is in need, God sends his church to meet that need. That we are now the hands and feet of Jesus that can multiply the fish and the loaves. That can make a difference with the small amount that we have as we sacrificially give it for the sake of others. And when we dig deep and we're willing to jump into the water and sacrificially help, miracles take place. The sympathy we have for the world around us is no substitute for action. But we need to be a people who stay consistent in our giving to what God has provided to us so that we can help others. That includes our time and volunteering, and includes our resources, even what's in a bank account. And trust that as we give, God will provide what we need and help others with what they need. It's hard, it's not easy, but Jesus said these words in Matthew 11:28. Jesus said, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." Promise of our Savior who gave his life for us. He said there will be no greater love than a friend who lays down his life for another. And we need to be those people to each other and to the world around us. And to trust that as we give of ourselves to meet the needs of other people, that God will also meet our needs. And many times that is going to happen through others as well. And that's our challenge as followers of Christ.